Welcome to the Cut for Time podcast here at the Canton United Methodist Church. My name is Pastor Clay. I'm joined by Eric Stearns, and today we're digging into my message from Sunday, which was the start of our resurrection sermon series, looking at how the resurrection affected several different characters that interacted with Jesus in this resurrection period, and then just focusing in on Thomas and just the way that Jesus met his needs in order to bring him to deeper faith. Let's get into it.
Sounds good. I kept thinking about, you know, at the end, you posed the question, what is one thing we need?
Mm-hmm.
And man, how nice would it be to be Thomas? You know, that the one thing he needed, this might actually tie in nicely. The one thing he needed was to see Jesus. There was a piece that we talked about off podcast or pre-podcast.
Yep.
In how the Gospel of John describes little things. Mm-hmm. So you want to talk about that again. And I thought that was really interesting and fits really well here.
Yeah, for sure. So John's Gospel, as you read through the stories in John's Gospel, as you read through the encounters that Jesus has, there are little details just kind of woven in that like don't necessarily pay off until you think more about them. Like the quintessential one that comes to mind for me is Nicodemus coming to Jesus by night. Like we know from John 3 that Nicodemus, you know, is a proud Jewish man. He's one of the teachers of the people of Israel, and he comes to Jesus by night. And like that in itself is a little detail that we don't really need to know. Like that's not substantive until it is, because that it coming by night it is a little bit of a hint as to like it leaves some room for interpretation. So why did he come at night? Why is John telling us this? Why was that so important that it is a part of the inspired word of God that he came to Jesus by night? And there are two possibilities that I think of. And first is that he was afraid. Like he was coming to Jesus to have a real faith conversation, and he's a member of a group of people that are supposed to hate Jesus. Right? Like, mm-hmm. So he's going to come by night under the cover of darkness so that people don't see, oh, hey, Nicodemus is like changing sides on us, or why is he hanging out with Jesus? And so he goes to him by night. The other idea, and this is set up other times, other places in the Gospel of John, is that darkness stands for not understanding, because he's going to completely misunderstand what Jesus is talking about. You know, Jesus is going to tell him that he has to be born from above. And Nicodemus is going to say, well, I'm really big and I can't enter my mother's womb a second time. So what in the world are you talking about, Jesus? Like, he's going to fundamentally understand. So he comes to Jesus at night, meaning that he doesn't understand, that he is in the dark about what Jesus is up to. And when you contrast that with John chapter 4, when Jesus meets the woman at the well, and they have this big, deep theological conversation about the nature of salvation, like and Jesus meets her at noon. So she fully understands. And then she fully becomes one that proclaims the gospel to her community. Like at the end of the story, she fully gets it. She is in the light of understanding. There are other places where John's gospel gives us these motifs. So, but the fact that John's gospel doesn't explicitly tell us that Thomas actually did go and touch Jesus after Jesus gave him the permission to do so, in a gospel that is so obsessed with minute details like that, to not have that detail leaves room for me to wonder if Thomas actually needed to touch Jesus in the same way that Thomas said he needed to. Or was it just the mere existence, or not the mere existence, was it the mere appearance of Jesus that Thomas really needed? Did Thomas just need what the other disciples needed and got from Jesus? Like the other disciples, these other 10 men had the opportunity to see Jesus and hear him pronounce peace over them and like see the risen Lord. And Thomas didn't for an entire week. And that had to have played in his mind of just like, well, why didn't Jesus appear to me? Like, what was it about? I mean, this is maybe me projecting onto it, but what's so wrong with me that Jesus didn't appear to me? Why didn't Jesus show up? And like the disciples are like telling him all this stuff and it's so cool. But if you don't experience that, you have no frame for that reference whatsoever. And so Thomas says, no, screw this. I will not believe until Jesus shows up and allows me to touch his hands and his side and all of the places where he has been wounded. I will not believe. And then Jesus shows up. And Jesus, like I said on Sunday, Jesus uses Thomas's own words, not to shame him or not to like condemn him for his doubt, but just to say, I get you. I understand that you are holding on to these doubts and you're holding on to them so tightly. And so if this is what you need, this is what you need. And then Thomas makes the great confession. This is my Lord and this is my God. Like, I really, really think that if Thomas would have actually touched Jesus, we would have known about it. And we don't. We just know that Jesus made the offer.
Mm-hmm.
So Jesus provides for Thomas not only what he actually needed, but what he thought he needed. And how many times is that true in our own lives where we think we know what we need and it's there, but it isn't necessarily what we ended up needing in the first place.
Yeah. But man, how easy would it be if we could actually see Jesus, see the, you know, see him as a physical being. And it's so hard sometimes to believe in a God who existed 2,000 years ago, you know, unwaveringly. And that maybe it's just a struggle for me. I don't think that's necessarily the case, but
no, definitely not. Definitely not.
And we have to rely on these accounts. You know, this account in particular really speaks to me because mm-hmm. I am Thomas.
Sure.
I think a lot of us are Thomas. And a lot of the stuff that, you know, I don't believe it until I've seen it or I've done it. Mm-hmm. And so and that's just a part of faith too, is we don't get that opportunity right now. And we just,
right.
We need to believe what is written and believe that it's actually true.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that can just be so hard.
It can be, definitely. And that's why I think that we are given little glimpses of, you know, God's presence with us. In Fanny Crosby's hymn, Blessed Assurance, she calls them a little bit of a foretaste, because I think that that's what they are. These moments where, again, Jesus meets us in this way that he met Thomas with what we need in that moment. You know, like I talked about Sunday with the bug bites, and I think it was, I mentioned it mainly because it was funny, but also because truthfully, it was a long week. Holy Week was a grind. And to, like, I was dealing with some, like, you know, what did I miss during Holy Week, or what did I do wrong during Holy, like my own brain stuff that happens sometimes, and a little bit of a shame spiral. And, you know, here I am, and then I'm bebopping into the office and there's this box of my favorite treat just sitting there. I mean, I can think of my times in my own life where, you know, things were going kind of sideways and I was maybe not necessarily doubting God, but I was certainly doubting myself or doubting my call. And then we just have this amazing moment in youth group where, like, the lesson, because I was a volunteer youth leader for a while. And when I was in college and seminary, you know, we would have this amazing moment in youth group where the lesson that I was going to do just absolutely connected, or I was able to have a personal conversation, or like there was a night in my dorm room where like it turned into a pastoral care session because like three people in a row just came in and sat on my couch and like just started talking about life. And I was like, okay, I mean, clearly we've built this trust, but clearly God's working through what I'm, you know, who I am as a person. And so I was able to minister in this weird way of just, you know, and then that was just at the most opportune time where I was like, you know, maybe I do need to change my major again. And maybe this really isn't the call of God. And what would it take to transfer back to Northern? And, you know, but then that happened and you're just like, oh, okay, God has put me here for a reason, and
right.
I'm on the right track.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. I think so often I don't recognize those moments until well after.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, you don't recognize that you were put in a place for the right reasons, because maybe you're, the outcome of whatever situation you're in isn't what you had expected.
Mm-hmm.
And then the actual outcome comes a lot, or the outcome that God wanted comes a lot later. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, I get it now. You know, and that's always hard for me too. And
sure.
And you tend to internalize, you know, what could I have done better?
Oh yeah.
You know, if something at work doesn't work out, or why am I getting passed up for something else or something like that? And you kind of internalize that, but you just have to keep the faith that something else is coming.
Right.
You know, if we don't get a project, for instance, and why didn't we get that project? But then we get a different project, you know, and we couldn't have done both.
Yep.
You know, and that kind of stuff. You kind of internalize those things and try to understand why. And
Sure.
you can't just sit, you know, pray and do, right? So you can't just sit there and do nothing about it. And maybe that is the reason why you didn't get it. And God really needs you to work harder and do things better and
yep.
use the skills that were given to you to get better results in whatever you're working on.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, it'd be a lot easier if Jesus would just show up and do it for me.
Yeah, that admittedly, yes, that would be a lot easier. Unfortunately, that's just not the way that that's not the way that Jesus operates. Yeah.
And that's not the way it was designed, right?
Correct. Yep.
We are here to do. We are here to work. We are here to don't just do that by sitting around and doing nothing.
You pray and then you do something. That's how it works. Yeah. Yep. Or to put it in the fancy Latin, ora et labora, pray and work.
Wow, fancy. Good for you.
Church nerd. We've been through this. So.
I loved the, so that portion of the passage where Jesus appears to them, and you go into how he didn't reprimand them. He didn't treat them poorly. He didn't scold them for running away, you know,
yes.
none of that
Yes.
stuff. And he just said, have peace. Like, don't worry about it. You know, everything's going to be okay. I'm here. You need to go do my work now because I can't do it anymore. But
right. Yep.
I don't know, that right there just gives you, well, so much peace.
Yeah, definitely.
Knowing how much we screw up and how much we can pull from that little chunk of the scripture, in knowing that it's going to be okay. You know, we screwed up. You need to recognize that you screwed up, but have peace with that. Jesus is here, you know? I just think that was so cool and how you made that parallel.
I also find it interesting that this is like the Pentecost moment in John's gospel. Like, because John, I mean, the way that John phrases it, when Jesus enters the room, he breathes on them. Like, that's the breath of the Holy Spirit on them. And like, it's interesting to me that like, there's, I mean, because, you know, there's no Pentecost moment in Luke either, because he has the book of Acts coming, but like, this is the receiving moment for them. You know, this is the commission. This is everything wrapped up into this one experience. And then here we find the disciples in the exact same position a week later, which, you know, not necessarily ideal, but it took them a little bit of time to get their heads wrapped around what Jesus was up to. And even then there was grace, you know, even then we're told in other gospels that Jesus hung around, and we're told, especially in the book, in the opening to the book of Acts, like it was, you know, 40 days later that the ascension happened and 50 days later that Pentecost happened. You know, and Jesus was with them that entire time, and like, Jesus is willing to send the Holy Spirit and tell them like to wait and to, you know, to wait until that final moment comes before they start doing the things that they're supposed to do. Like, Jesus gives them that recovery time, basically. Yeah. And that's another just part of the grace that's so present in the story.
Yeah. I mean, but their lives are so upside down. Like you talked about, they left everything to follow this guy for 3 years. And then he's just gone.
Yeah.
And what, first of all, I can't imagine leaving everything to follow one person. Even though that's what we're called to do. I get it. I mean, leaving our families, leaving our jobs, leaving whatever to just go follow this guy around. Like, I just can't even imagine. I can't imagine doing that.
Right.
And then for him to die 3 years later, 3 years is just not that long of a time.
No, it's not. I mean,
think about how old our kids are, and it feels like yesterday they were born, you know?
Yeah. Autumn will literally be 7 and a half tomorrow. So
yeah, Nellie turns 9 in June. I remember the day you came to interview and Lindsay's holding Simon, tiny little Simon. Well, not tiny.
Not really tiny.
But Simon was a baby.
Yeah, he was very much a baby. Yeah.
He is not a baby anymore. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is.
You know, and so these guys go through this.
Mm-hmm.
So I get why it took them some time to really understand what to do. You know, and Jesus allows them to have that time.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that they needed some time to just sit and rest and process and get ready for what's to come.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, I think sometimes I am terrible about this. All too often, I will just rush into the next thing.
Mm.
You know, not really just take the time to understand what's going on. And I don't take the time to rest. I don't take the time to process, you know, all of the situations that's going on in my life. I just need to fill it with the next thing and work on stuff because I have lots of stuff to work on.
Yep.
But I just think this is another example where God is calling us to just be still and understand what's being asked of us, you know, or truly think about what's going on. And yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Be okay with listening a little bit.
Right. Yeah. I mean, cause that's what the situation would have required for the disciples. I mean, because everything was so unknown for them, like, you know, they had to wait. And like the good news for everybody is that Jesus was with them throughout that entire experience. Like I kind of already referenced a little bit in John, if we were to continue to read in John 20, you know, Jesus meets them on the shoreline later. You know, they're just, you know, they go fishing and they haul in all this fish that they can't even count. And they just realize that it has to be Jesus is the guy on the shore telling them what to do. You know, and then that's when they have breakfast together and Peter is restored. And like, you know, Jesus continued to be with them throughout that waiting. And just, you know, there are times when we feel like we're abandoned and alone in that time of waiting. But really we're not, because Jesus does operate in the same way in our own lives still.
Yeah.
If you haven't already answered it, you know, just like, what is the thing that you need to be brought to deeper faith? Like, cause we've made it through Holy Week, we've been through all of the things, we've been doing all this stuff for quite a while. We've done all the reenactments and the Living Last Supper and the Good Friday, and you know, like we've been through the resurrection story again. And so just what is it that you find yourself needing right at this moment that Jesus is working on providing for you?
I was struggling to answer that as I was driving home today. I was thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have an answer, but I think I may have just answered that question. I need peace. I need to just sit and listen and process and not be in such a hurry to do the next thing and to work on the next thing. And
sure,
you know, whether that be just slow down and play with my kids, or you know, not just stop hurrying through life is what I need.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything can be on, you know, especially like, I don't know, whether it's my faith or anything else, everything can sometimes be on such a superficial level. You don't get a deeper understanding, and I just want to do, and then I, you know, you wear yourself out or you don't do as good as you could be doing. You know?
It's fair.
So how about for you? What is it that you need?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was kind of dreading being asked that question, to be honest with you. Like just in terms of nuts and bolts ministry, what I need is just some time. Like I'm not as planned out as I like to be. I'm working more than just a week ahead. I know where I'm going with the next sermon series, but like after that, there's a pretty big gap on the calendar. I'm just like, I don't know what to do. You know, I don't quite. I've had this really intentional motion so far of like, you know, let's talk about prayer and let's, you know, use Lent to kind of talk even more about prayer. And now that we're out of prayer, you know, let's talk about resurrection. Let's find ourselves in these stories and be emboldened to go forth and be resurrection people. But after that, it gets a little bit dicey in my plan of like, what do we do now? So Yeah, I just kind of need time and space to be in prayer about what that means and how to put together those next steps. But personally, I mean, I think I just need rest. I mean, Holy Week was so big and so, I mean, it was awesome and good and whatever, but it was still just very tiring and just kind of between life being busy and church being busy, it just kind of gets to be a lot. And yeah, I just think I need some rest at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I had someone request, like I was, cause I did daily devotions on video all the way through the season of Lent. And like on Sunday, someone's like, "Oh, I miss those daily devotions so much. Can you start doing them again?" I was like, "I will pray about it. I honest to God am praying about it. But hold that thought. I have a plan." So,
well, the more you give, the more is asked of you, right?
Right.
Hmm.
Yep. No, that does feel doable sure, with where I'm at. So, I legitimately do have a plan for that. So,
it's good. Exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Nice.
But yeah. So,
what's next week in the resurrection discussion?
Yeah. So next week we're gonna be turning our attention to Mary Magdalene. We're gonna be turning our attention to like the original witness of the resurrection, at least in John's gospel. And also she is on the roster of the Marys in all of the gospels at the resurrection. So we know that Mary was one of the very first people, and in John's gospel was the one to take this message to the disciples. And so we'll be looking at just what impact Jesus had on her life. We're also going to be debunking some of the assumptions about who Mary Magdalene was as a person, because as I've been studying this week and reading commentaries and listening to other folks, there is no biblical evidence to suggest that she was a prostitute. We know that she was healed of demons, but we do not know what those demons were. We've made conjectures based on a sermon preached by Pope Gregory the Great a long, long time ago that kind of conflated the Marys, and we've just been running with it since then. So we're going to be digging into a little bit of Mary's past and just, you know, doing some due diligence when it comes to that part of her character. But then also just dealing with the fact that we don't know what her demons were. We just know that she had demons, and that had to have been such a dark thing to go through. But yet she goes from this demon-possessed woman to the proclaimer of the resurrection. And that's the type of change that Jesus works in her life. And so what is the kind of change that Jesus has the power to make in our lives? Like, we can think that we are so far gone and just an absolute wretched scoundrel. And that might be true, but even then we're not outside of the grace of Jesus Christ. And so what change is Jesus making in our lives? What difference is Jesus making in our lives? And how do we then use that as a springboard to go and be about the work of Jesus in the world? Because Mary Magdalene is one of the women that like bankrolls the ministry of Jesus. Like, she stays connected to what becomes the early church. Like, we know more about her present and her future than we do about her past, because that's the important part of the story. So we're digging into Mary Magdalene and just seeing the change that that Jesus works in her life and the change that Jesus works in our own lives.
Sure. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us on this week's Cuffer Time podcast. Join us again next week in person at 10 a.m. at the church, on Facebook Live, or back here for the podcast next week.
Thanks for listening to our Cut for Time conversation. Join us for worship in person or on Facebook Live Sundays at 10 o'clock Central Time. And now go in peace and serve the Lord.